From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Melissa Block. Among Britain's 1.8 million Muslims, there is anxiety over a sharp rise in what's being called Islamophobia. Anti-terrorist legislation and proposals for even tougher measures have led to widespread disaffection, anger, and isolation of Muslim youth. We continue our series on Muslims in Europe with a report from NPR's Sylvia Pajoli in London.
Othello's tragic final verses echo through Shakespeare's Globe Theatre.
Speak of me as I am.
Speak of me as I am.
One who loved not wisely, but too well. Hudu wa salem.
Hudu wa salem.
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 That last word, peace, is in Arabic, which would have been the Moor's native language. This bilingual Othello was part of a workshop for schoolchildren, only one of several national events to mark Islam Awareness Week. It was launched Monday with an elegant reception at the Globe. The guest list was the who's who of British Muslims. Iqbal Sakrani from the Muslim Council of Britain, the major Muslim lobby group, was one of the speakers.
Shakespeare is an important symbol of Britishness. And the fact that today Muslims are engaging with Shakespeare texts is a sign to me of how Muslims have become more British.
Britain is unique in Europe. After the breakup of its empire, it became a haven for Muslims from around the world, and it nurtured a Muslim establishment. Its members include prominent doctors, lawyers, writers, and journalists. A recent poll showed that 33% of Muslims want more integration in mainstream British society. But Britain's Muslim upper crust, whose size is difficult to measure, is a leadership without followers. The vast majority of British Muslims live in poor, closed communities. One of the country's largest is in London's East End. This neighborhood is known as Banglatown for its many residents of Bangladeshi origin. Street signs are in English and Bangladeshi. Sidewalks are lined with curry restaurants and Asian fabric shops. Bangla hip-hop pours out of a video store. And no one we talk to has heard of Islam Awareness Week. But as in other Muslim enclaves throughout the country, Muslim men are keenly aware that they've become the prime targets of police scrutiny. 55-year-old Mohammed Shamsuddin, a Muslim from India, no longer feels safe.
When we are driving the car, the police stop us, search us. We don't know nothing. Police can search anybody. But why we ask? Because they think we are a terrorist.
A report issued last week by the Open Society Institute says that after 9/11, Islamophobia is soaring. Young Muslim men are at increasing risk of social exclusion. It says the high number of stop and searches under new anti-terrorism measures is fueling a sense of being under siege. Muslim youth, the report adds, are the new folk devils of the media, which portray them as the embodiment of fundamentalism. This state of affairs dismays Baroness Udin, the first Muslim to enter the House of Lords.
You know, I don't see a future which is secure.
A native of Bangladesh, Paula Manzila Udin grew up in Banglatown and became a social worker and Labour Party activist.
It would be tragedy on a mass scale if my children didn't have the kind of future that I've had here. My fear would be that they are struggling like our parents struggled. To some extent, my fear is that we've gone back. You know, we've not been able to capitalize on our generation commitment to make sure that, you know, our children's future is secure.
Demonization of Muslims has led many of the young to a rediscovery of Islam. Radio Ummah is one of the many radio stations broadcasting on the airwaves during Ramadan and online the rest of the year. It combines current affairs, women's programs, call-in shows, and readings of the Quran. Talk show host Sophia Amin was born in Britain 30 years ago in what she calls a non-conventional Asian Muslim family, where none of the women covered their hair with a hijab. She sees her embrace of religion as part of her educational process.
I used to myself perceive Islam as quite backwards, and I used to feel quite sorry for women that used to cover. So when I started learning, I couldn't believe how negatively I had perceived Islam myself from the West, from what I'd learned. Once I accepted the Quran was the truth, I wanted to follow it. And the way I behaved to other people changed. My attitude changed to life.
Today, Sophia wears a hijab, does not shake hands with men, and will not allow her photograph to be taken. She and her colleagues at Radio Ummah promote education of women and try to engage a disaffected Muslim youth who do not find answers at traditional mosques.
The problem we find with some mosques is that they try to appease the government, and that repels youngsters who feel that this is a sign of hypocrisy.
Azam Tamimi runs the Institute of Islamic Political Thought. A Palestinian who's been living in London since 1974, he laments that by co-opting the Muslim establishment, British authorities have not done enough to promote what he envisions as integration.
We've been struggling here in this country to get the government to recognize our Islamic personal law. What harm does it do anybody here if matters of divorce and marriage are dealt with in accordance with Sharia? A reform of legislation would allow for an exception to the Muslims.
While having tea with Tamimi in his home in West London, his 20-year-old son Naji joins the discussion. He says events in Iraq and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict are having an impact on young British Muslims like him.
Looking at the TV screen and seeing all these people getting killed, you can't take it anymore, to be honest. As a Muslim, it's always my dream to sacrifice myself in the sake of Allah, which is my Lord. So what is happening in Palestine, for instance, is people are sacrificing themselves to their cause. And I think if I had the opportunity to go there and sacrifice myself, why not?
The polarization and radicalization fueled by the conflict in the Middle East is a source of anguish for British Muslims who inhabit what Egyptian-born author Adaf Souyef calls mezzaterra, the land in between, the common ground between cultures. From her collection of essays, Mezzaterra, she reads,
"This was the world that my generation believed we had inherited, an area of overlap, where one culture shaded into the other, where echoes and reflections added depth and perspective, where differences were interesting rather than threatening because they were foregrounded against a backdrop of affinities."
Souyef, who has made London her home, feels her mezzaterra is under attack from all sides, from extremists who are waging war against the West, and from the West, with its constant demands that Muslims reject their cultural identity.
Islam is both a faith and a culture. If you attack one, you're attacking the other. Even people who would call themselves secular Muslims are really scared at the extent to which they're being required to denounce everything that makes up their life.
Most of all, Adaf Souyef worries what will happen to the next generation, including her two sons.
Are they going to have the mezzaterra, which to my mind is richer than any other space, or are they going to be forced to choose, to say, I am this or I am that, in a context of this and that being enemies of each other? What do you do?
Sylvia Poggioli, NPR News, London.
You can find links and photos for this story at our website, npr.org. Next week, our series continues in France.